supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Nationals beat the Phillies last night 4-2. Today's game happens at 7:05 this evening at the park. Roy Oswalt on the mound for the Phillies. He'll face southpaw John Lannon. And the Union meet FC Dallas at PPL Park at 8. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a topic we kind of dance around a lot, but we've never approached directly. And we're going to nail it down. We're going to give you a step-by-step process on how to plant the perfect lawn using cool season grasses like bluegrass, fescue, and rye, because now is the time of year you want to be doing that. Spring-sown lawns do not work in the north, so get your tillers ready and be sure to listen to the question of the week. Otherwise, it's phone call show, cats and kittens, so we're going to take that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Kevin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. This is Kevin. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. Kev, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Down here in the beautiful Outer Banks of North Carolina, right there on the coast in the Barrier Islands.
Oh, okay. Where exactly?
A little town called Kill Devil Hills.
Oh, I know it well. That's like the Wright Brothers.
Absolutely, yes.
Area.
I actually live right behind the monument.
It's a beautiful area there. I visited it many times. What can we do for Kevin in Kill Devil Hills?
Well, I recently purchased a home that was a foreclosure. It was a beautiful home, about an acre of property. It's cut up into three sections. They have a front yard, a little play area for the children, and then a backyard with a saltwater pool. And the previous owner had taken muriatic acid that you used in the pool and decided to carve out expletives in the centipede grass. And now I've got some pretty foul language in my backyard. I've actually dug up and put some sod over top. I've used Bermuda. And then in the children's area, I've totally gutted all that and put Bermuda down. But I can tell that the soil has been really tainted because it's burning the Bermuda as well. My question to you, of course, is what are my options and what would you recommend?
Well, first of all, did anybody call this guy out on this ridiculous damage? I mean, did the bank go after him or whoever and make him pay for the damage? I mean, this seems like a criminal act. Did anybody call him out on this?
As far as I know, I don't believe that anyone called him out on it. It was a foreclosure, so I guess that when the loss of the house was pretty drastic, and he might have kind of lost his senses, obviously, at that point.
I would think
probably didn't come and inspect the home too closely. Of course, when I've got the sprinklers, he took concrete and poured it down into the well point, and once we cleaned that out and got the sprinklers working, the grass started greening up real nice, as centipede does. And then all of a sudden, then you realize what the damage has been.
I would call the EPA. The fact that he poured this stuff into the environment, I would like to see him in handcuffs. Okay, so here's your story. You're going to stick with a warm season grass, right? You're talking Bermuda, you're talking centipede.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that work would be done in the spring, not now. What you can do now, and I'm presuming your soil is like 100% sand.
It's sand, yeah, mostly sand. I would say definitely 70-80% sand, and then a little bit of topsoil mixed in there.
If you think you can isolate some areas where this acid has bound to the particles of sand, it would be a mitzvah to the environment if you could actually get that sand hauled away, which may be another reason to call the EPA in. This guy may have created a toxic waste issue on your land, and if it's still coming out on the grass, it's still there, it would be nice to get it barreled and out of there and disposed of properly. Otherwise, what you want to do is just keep flushing the soil. How far are you from the ocean?
We're pretty far from the ocean.
Okay.
I would say we're probably a mile away from the ocean.
Okay.
We're about less than a quarter mile away from the sound, which is a brackish water.
Right. Man, if you could pump some sound water, I mean, just keep flushing and flushing and flushing. And then in the spring, what I want you to do is get rid of as much out there as you can. From now through the spring, finding a big load of yard waste compost. You may have to get a load trucked up from Maryland or something. But you'll always use less water and have a better looking lawn if you can mix some organic matter into that sand. And compost would be the ideal. And then, although there are Bermuda grasses that you can sow from seed, these are not typically the improved varieties for very specialized environments like you're going to deal with. So typically a southern lawn is always installed in the spring, and typically it's installed via sod, sprigs, or plugs. If you wind up not finding that organic matter and you got to eat the sand, you know, you got to get some topsoil mixed in with it at the very least. But if you don't do a lot to improve the organic matter, I would urge you to spring for the sod and try to keep that well watered, and that should endure the summer heat pretty well, especially the centipede. The centipede is supposed to be the easiest care grass that we use in the United States. If you do improve the organic matter, then you might be able to save some money, because if you have a fertile soil, then you can buy sprigs or plugs, and that will fill in with the organic matter, allowing it to bridge the spaces between the plugs.
Okay.
Now's the time to try to get the contaminated soil out of there, remediate it, flush the soil, get that organic matter lined up, and then you should be able to plant a really nice lawn in the spring.
Okay. Well, I certainly do appreciate this.
All right, and I'm sorry for your troubles. That should not have happened.
That's the way life is sometimes.
No, it isn't. Turn them in.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, Kev.
Uh-huh. Take care.
1-888-346-9499. Gene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. I'm really glad to be talking to you in person for a change. I've been enjoying your show for a couple of years now.
Okay, very good. Well, we're finally happy to talk to you. Where are you?
I'm in Boothwyn, Pennsylvania, right at the southern tip of Delaware County near the near Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. I know where that is. So what can we do for you?
Well, I had quite a bit of landscaping put into my property last year. One of the items was a crepe myrtle tree, which is doing beautifully, thank God, because it cost a small fortune. But I have a question about when or whether to deadhead the sections of the tree where the old flowers were when they dry up and turn brown in the wintertime or the fall.
Oh, okay.
Am I supposed to deadhead that?
No.
That's sort of a first part. And the second part is, if I want to prune the tree to sort of keep it a certain height, when is the best time to do that and how?
Good questions. Deadheading is important to do for a lot of plants. With roses, you multiply the number of bloom runs you get. Azaleas and rhododendrons, when they're done blooming. Spring bulbs, too. They love to have the old flower heads cut off. But plants that bloom late in the season should always be left alone, especially plants like your crepe myrtle, which, as you know, were never grown in your part of the country 10, 15 years ago, thanks to global warming and climate change. That southern tree has moved northward and should do very well for you where Pennsylvania meets Delaware, but you would risk killing it were you to prune it or cut off the spent flowers in the fall or early winter. These trees are going, like figs, to suffer a little bit of winter damage because they are north of their normal range, and that's fine. Because you're kind of leaving that sacrificial area up top that you're not going to keep anyway long term. And that's where the winter damage will occur. So then in the springtime, when this tree starts to green up and the butterfly bush comes back, that's the time to take off the top 1 or 2 feet of the tree to get rid of the winter damaged areas and to improve the blooming. These plants do really enjoy kind of having their heads lopped off in early spring. It really encourages a fuller show of those. What color is yours?
It's a really beautiful hot pink.
I guess
you'd call it fuchsia.
And you'll get more of them. The color will be more defined if you give it a haircut in the spring. The crepe myrtles I'm most familiar with are the ones I see lining Route 13 all up and down the eastern shore as you're driving
right
through Virginia. And those are pretty much straight trees with a big canopy at the top. If you have things coming up out of the soil next to the tree, they might be suckers that might need to be removed. If you're saying you have a shrubby form, then I would not cut off anything that did not flower
okay
the year before. But you can cut off a good foot or two. And the idea,
okay,
the goal with pruning is not to commit crepe murder, where you
right
cut the plant to the ground, because
right
then you wind up with a really ugly-looking plant. But the idea is to try to keep the plant at a stable height year after year after year. So if it grows 3 feet in the summer, you're perfectly welcome to take off 3 feet in the spring. And that'll always keep the flowers right where they're in the best shot for your eyes.
Okay, great. That's excellent. I really appreciate that.
All right, my pleasure. You enjoy your crepe myrtle. And remember, everybody out there, no pruning in the fall. You can only injure a plant by pruning it in the fall. Any
okay
plant.
Okay.
Okay?
Got it. Thank you very much.
All right, you take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and thank all of the fine folks who brave the record-breaking heat to come out for my appearances at the fabulous Goodell Gardens and Homestead in Edinburgh, PA a few weeks back, and to say how impressed I was with the gardens and homesteads at Goodell, a little jewel that preserves a perfect piece of a simpler time of life. But don't you go planning your trip to northwestern PA just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the right way to plant a lawn that will take care of itself in the north. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's 50th birthday festival brings Levon Helm, David Bromberg, Arlo Guthrie, Tom Rush, Tempest, and more to the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford for the weekend of August 19th through the 21st for concerts, crafts, camping, and children's activities. The Philadelphia Folk Festival's 50th birthday celebration. Details at 1-800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is committed to making lives better every day. They've developed a partnership with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for pediatrics and neonatal care. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, one of the biggest mistakes people make is planting a lawn at the wrong time of year. If you want or have fescue, bluegrass, or rye, the time to put that in or repair it is coming up soon, like next week. So if you want a good-looking lawn in the north or just want to grow a cool season grass seed, we'll walk you through the process step by step. After a whole bunch more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Chuck, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How are you?
Good, thanks.
And where is Chuck good?
We're in East Falls in Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Chuckster?
It's a pots on the deck problem.
Okay.
I have like 3 15-gallon pots on my deck.
Okay.
And I've had them out there for about 6 years.
Okay.
And now these last 3 years, I had a red maple in one, an elderberry in one, and a red smoke bush in one.
What?
So out on the deck, it was all the red foliage.
Oh,
the burgundy foliage, right?
Well, you realize that's a dangerous game when you leave.
I do now.
when you leave perennials in pots out over winter. In the middle of the city, they can survive a mild winter, but the rule is that in any given 5 years, the roots are going to freeze and you're going to lose those plants. Trees and shrubs need to have their roots planted in the soil so they can go down below the frost line.
Right. Well, for the last, anyway, for 3 years, they did real well. And then 3 years ago, they started, the red maple turned like, started to crinkle up and turn brown. It would leaf out beautifully. The elderberry leafed out and flowered, the smoke bush. And I have, like, underplanting the geraniums and potato plant and all that. So for two summers, they really started to, after they leafed out and everything, they would brown out, they would start dropping their leaves, and I figured it was something, I didn't know what it was. We figured it was something in the dirt, it was a fungus, it was a mold or something.
You never thought about winter, huh?
No, I didn't. Because they kept coming back, and they came back beautifully. And then this past year, I figured it was a mold or something, and this year I took all the pots, took all the dirt out of them, scrubbed them, you know, if it was a mold or a fungus, bought two new elderberries and put them in the big pots and kept the same maple. But that maple, I even rinsed its roots out and everything, fresh dirt. And everything looked, the elderberries flowered, they were growing like crazy. The red maple came back beautiful underneath all the geraniums. They were going gangbusters. And then all of a sudden, about 3 weeks ago, everything started dropping its leaves again.
Okay, so what are you feeding these plants?
Well, I wasn't giving them anything.
Okay.
It was just all fresh soil, and I had compost in the soil.
What is the soil? Where did the soil come from?
I got a big bale from a farm over in Jersey of potting soil,
okay,
with manure mixed into it, light manure, nothing too strong. And then I just added some compost I have here.
Okay. And how did you water them?
We water them every day because this deck is in the full sun. I mean, all day long. It really does. The sun beats on this deck all day long. And we were watering them, you know, every day.
Without checking them, without kind of rocking them to see how heavy or light they were?
Oh, no. I would test to see if they were holding the water. All these pots drain.
Okay.
So I would test the pot to see if, you know,
and
if,
when you. And
it
when you
dried out.
And when you water, is there anything underneath the pots to hold the water?
Two of them have saucers. One of them does not.
Do you?
And they're up off the deck. They're on a stand.
Do you allow water to stand in the saucers?
No, I don't. Not usually.
Okay. The only thing I can think is that either they're overplanted. You've got too many plants in each pot because you're talking about jamming a lot of stuff in there. I will guarantee you, no matter what's happening to them over the summer, they're not going to make it through every winter. You know, when you have a deck, when you have plants on a deck, that's why God made annuals. That's for pepper plants and tomato plants and cucumbers. And if you have shade, begonias and impatiens. If you don't, marigolds and petunias. And then really in the winter time, you know, that's when you put in some plastic Christmas trees or something like that. Because the only plants that are guaranteed to survive in pots over winter are very specialized alpine plants that are rated down to zone 3. And,
right.
And even then, they need to be in bigger containers than...
Yeah, but these are like, they're 15, 20-gallon pots. But, you know, I'm thinking this year, that these last 3 years like this, I think it just might be the heat, that these pots just heat up.
Plants that are rated for, quote, full sun. That's an average of the country and an average of climates. When we get a hellish summer, any plant wants afternoon shade. So
yeah.
Since you're on your deck, you could also just try rigging up some big beach umbrella from, like, you know, professional growers do this. They run the shade cloth over the hoop houses at around 1 or 2 in the afternoon on days like this to cool the plants off. I mean, you wouldn't look real hot if you were standing out there broiling, and if it really is full sun all day long. Try giving them a gentle organic plant food to kind of give them a little boost, like a fish and seaweed mix, and try rigging up some afternoon shade on these blinding days and see if they perk back up. But I also recommend that you try to put them in some sort of stasis. Get them into a garage or something for the winter time. They really shouldn't be out there in pots all winter long.
Okay.
All right, man?
All right, I appreciate it.
Good luck, Chuck.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Take care.
I love the show.
Thank you, sir. 1-888-346-9499. Doug, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, how are you today?
I am doing just fine today. Doug, how are you, sir?
Excellent.
And where is Doug excellent?
Well, it's a cooler day in north central Ohio, in Mansfield, Ohio.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Doug in Mansfield, Ohio?
Well, I was listening last week. It sparked this question that you were talking to a lady, I think it was, about poison ivy. And I have a flowering quince, a red flowering quince, that my dad planted when I was a young fella, and I'm living at home now. And it has a poison ivy about as big around as your thumb, vine coming up right in the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a foot and a half diameter, you know, many, many stalks. So I guess my question is, and I've tried to think of many ways to get rid of it without killing the quince plant, if you had any suggestions on a way to get rid of that poison ivy.
Oh, yeah. The thing about poison ivy that is so treacherous, especially in this world of spray everything that moves and half the things that don't, is you can spray poison ivy with any herbicide. The plant will brown, maybe even blacken and shrivel up. But the uracil oil that gives people the rash is still there. It is unchanged. So people spray these plants with herbicides. They think they're safe. They rip them out. Then they get poison ivy. And, you know, they could have done that without spending the money on the herbicide, you know. So the idea is for you to follow the same basic plan that I tell other people, which is you want to completely soak the ground where that vine is emerging from the soil. And then you want to get two big shopping bags from the mall, not the supermarket, the big thick shopping bags from a good mall store. And you want to slide one over each hand and arm, and you want to reach down with your bag-covered hand, and you want to pull gently at the base of that vine. If it's an older vine, you might have to rock it around a little bit. This would be a good time to have a partner with you, or just leave the hose running at the base of the plant the entire time you're doing this. And then when you slowly, you can't pull like a guy, you got to pull slowly. You may see little side runners coming up, little demon vines that you didn't even know were there. Just keep pulling slowly. Then when you get it all out of the ground, just back away gently to try to pull the vine completely off of the plant. Because, you know, poison ivy will grow into other plants and it'll attach itself to trees, but a lot of times it's just leaning against them. So if you don't see those hairy feet showing that it's actually attached itself to your plant, just keep moving backwards, pull gently till you get the whole vine out, and then using your plastic bag hands, just roll it up inside the bags, and then I would have somebody else with plastic bags on their hand pick up this mess, put it in another plastic bag, throw it in the trash, and then both of you rinse your hands and arms down real well with cool water. You know, it wouldn't be out of line to really spray the quince plant heavily where it was touched by the poison ivy plant to make sure there's no uracil oil on the quince leaves that you could pick up accidentally when you're pulling off a discolored leaf later on. And to prevent this in the future, you would need to do something that would prevent birds from getting comfortable and sitting on top of your quince plant, because that's where the poison ivy came from.
Right.
birds eat the seed, then they sit someplace, then they take off, they lighten their load, and they become poison ivy farmers when they do.
Thank you, Mike. I enjoy your show every week.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
You too. Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Stephanie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Steph. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Stephanie doing good?
We are in Oklahoma City.
All right. Very good. Sorry about the summer you guys have had to endure.
Yeah, it's pretty hot down here. 111 today.
Oh, God. You poor people. I have been trying to cast all my rain spells in your direction.
Well, we need it.
Yeah, I know. I know you guys are just burning up. All right, what can we do for Stephanie in the hot spot of Oklahoma?
Well, I've been having some problems with my tomato plants. I'm an amateur gardener. I've started my garden last year, so this is my second year, and the plants are actually doing quite well. They're huge. They're about 4 to 5 feet tall, but I have not gotten a tomato one from any of them, and I have about 5 or 6 of them.
Boy,
I can't quite figure out what to do, and I don't know if it's related with the heat that we've been having, but I just, you know, like I said, they're beautiful, and they're luscious, and they smell delicious, but there's just not a tomato one on them.
Are they getting full sun all day?
All day long.
Yeah, see, that is the problem, Steph. Tomato plants will not set fruit in temperatures like you guys have been enduring. I mean, I have not checked your weather every day. It's just been too depressing. but it seems like you've had precious few days cool enough for tomatoes to set fruit.
Okay.
When you get above 90 degrees, it's very difficult for the plant to produce viable pollen. When you get above 95 degrees, any pollen on any of the tomato flowers just burns to a crisp. And then you really need relatively cool nights to get the fruit production. I just fear that the only people getting tomatoes in your region are ones who curse their shade the rest of the year. Their tomatoes get sun in the morning, but then they're shaded by houses or trees in the afternoon, and that may bring down the temperatures enough to allow the plants to set fruit.
Okay.
Now, I presume, I shouldn't presume anything. I'll just go over the basics anyway with you. I think 90% it's the heat. Growing in raised beds or flat ground?
Flat ground.
Okay, you got to move up to raised beds in the future. What are you feeding them?
Kind of here and there. I just put my compost on there and water it. And we have to water it every other day because we're on a water limit right now.
Well, you wouldn't want to water more often than every other day.
Okay.
In a raised bed system with good organic mulch on the ground, you'd only be watering twice a week, even in your heat. But I'm presuming there's no mulch around the plants?
No.
Okay, you're killing these poor things. I mean, this is like the Western movie where the good guy gets, like, tied to an anthill in the blazing sun or something. What you want to do is you want to go to a garden center. You want to find a nice natural garden center. You want a nice, balanced, organic tomato food. If it's granular, I want you to scratch the recommended amount into the surface around your plants and then cover it with some of your compost or more soil. If it's liquid, just water it into the ground around your plants. Now, do you have any leaves from last fall, any access to straw or pine straw or any kind of mulch?
We have pine needles galore,
okay.
But I do have some, like, regular mulch that I bought at the store.
What is regular mulch?
I can tell you.
Trashy wood mulch, dyed some color never seen in nature?
Probably.
Don't use it near your home. Don't use it near any plants. If you got to use it for something, it's good for keeping the weeds down in the lanes between your raised beds. But these mulches are death on a stick to plants. Give your tomatoes a good gentle feeding because it seems like they're starved for some fruiting nutrients.
Okay.
Get those pine needles down on the surface of the soil to try to keep it cool. when you water, water deeply. Don't water for short periods of time. Really soak that soil for like an hour at a pop. And it would not be crazy if you could erect some kind of shade cloth or a big beach umbrella to shade your plants from 1 o'clock in the afternoon on.
Okay. Just like a canopy above them or something?
Yes. Yes. And when the weather finally does break for you guys, you should get a nice run of tomatoes. The nice thing here is this isn't permanent. It will... Your tomatoes should be fine once the hot weather breaks. But in the meantime, you can artificially cool them down. What I want you to do is also go to our website. Go to You Bet Your Garden.
Okay.
Click on Garden Answers A to Z. I want you to read the instructions on building raised beds. I want you to build at least one raised bed for next year.
Okay.
And then read the ones on tomato caging and support as well.
Okay.
All right, Steph?
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Well,
it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who wants to grow garlic for harvest next year, and that should include all of yous, to find your planting supply while you still can. Locally grown heads of garlic from a farmer's market near you will provide the absolute best cloves for planting. And you can find good garlic planting stock at the websites of the better seed catalog companies. But don't delay. Good garlic sells out fast. And don't you go securing your stinking rose stock just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the exact right way to plant a new cool season lawn that will take care of itself for you when we return. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
It's 11:38. This is WHYY.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Trevose Horticultural Society cordially invites the public to attend their annual flower show on Friday, August 26th and Saturday, August 27th at the Wood River Village Auditorium in Bensalem, PA. Admission is free. I'll host a nifty fundraiser for the nice folks who care for the historic Fairhill Burial Ground on Sunday, September 18th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the University Barge Club headquarters on beautiful Boathouse Row. And Philabundance is accepting donations of fresh garden produce to help feed the area's hungry. You can drop your extras off Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon at any of 11 different area locations. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Later today on Fresh Air Weekend, how Christopher Columbus forever changed the biosphere by sailing back and forth between Europe and the Americas. Charles Mann says Columbus essentially recreated Pangaea by combining huge numbers of plants and animals from multiple continents. Mann calls it a tremendous ecological convulsion. Hear more at 1 today on Fresh Air Weekend here on WHYY. And also, learn more about the WHYY Connections Festival featuring Ken Burns' Prohibition, Dr. Dog, and the Baseball Project. Visit WHYY.org/connections festival.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Now is the time to install a new cool season lawn. That's anybody in the north or anybody who wants to grow bluegrass, rye, or fescue. We will walk you through the steps and help you achieve a lawn that will take care of itself for years to come. After a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Joan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am well. Joan, how are you?
It's fine. I just cooled down up here in Michigan a little bit, thank heavens.
Okay, and I'm going to guess you're in Traverse City?
Well, no, we're Kalkaska, but nobody knows where that is, so we usually say we're Traverse City.
All right, what can we do for Joan in Michigan?
Well, we went and bought a thing to make composting in from the Home Depot store, and now we need to know what to do to start this composting, or is it too late in the season to start composting?
No, it's just a little bit too early. You're almost there. Although I'll tell you, here in Pennsylvania, we already have a shocking number of fall leaves down from the intense heat we've had. A lot of trees, the tulip poplars in my backyard, have started to shed their leaves in surprising numbers to get through the heat wave. It's just a survival response. There's nothing wrong with the trees. But that is the essence of composting dried, shredded fall leaves. And so your timing really couldn't be better. You'll be able to situate your composter and have it all ready to start filling it up when your leaves come down. Now, what kind of composter did you get?
A recycled black plastic, but it's not the tub that you turn either. They have some that you turn there.
Yes.
We didn't get that. This is just a black one, recycled plastic. We're hoping to get some compost for next year.
Oh, you will. You will. I have about four of the recycled black plastic units. One of the things I love about them is the top comes off, so it's easy to fill, but the tops typically lock. They have a little
right.
locking mechanism, so you can put your food waste in there without worrying too much about big vermin like raccoons or squirrels getting in there. And everyone I've seen has a little coal chute kind of device at the bottom, which is important because although you add the raw materials to the top, because of the action of composting, because the heat is generated towards the bottom of the pile, it is the bottom of the material that becomes compost fast,
okay.
or fastest. So if and when you get good at this, you can actually use these units to add material to the top, and then you can open that chute and see if the compost underneath is finished, and you can harvest that, whereby people with other types of units have to make batch compost where it has to all be completely finished so they can use it.
I'm glad we went that way then.
And I urge you, if you enjoy it and you generate a lot of waste, to add to it. There's nothing cuter looking than a line of these things in a row, and you just fill them up and use them in sequence. When the fall leaves start to come down, I advise people to get a leaf blower with a reverse setting and a bag and just vacuum up the leaves. Then you go to your composter, you empty the bag, the leaves are already shredded. Now when you get a good couple of layers of leaves, you can throw some garbage in, remembering that the stuff that comes out of your kitchen that is the most useful in your pile is going to be coffee grounds.
Okay, well, we have that.
That's the material that makes compost the fastest. I would urge you not to put in a lot of things like eggshells or citrus rinds or banana peels because they just take forever.
Okay.
And they don't really add anything. It's much better to save up your eggshells separately and use those when you plant your tomatoes to provide calcium to the plants.
Oh, that's good to know.
But if you fill this thing up with lots and lots of shredded leaves and mix in small amounts of your kitchen waste, you will make good compost. I do just have to warn you, because you are in Michigan, you are in a cold climate, don't expect miracles over the winter time.
Okay.
The more coffee grounds you put in, the faster it will compost.
Well, I think I'll go to the senior center and ask them if I can get there.
Absolutely. Coffee grounds are very rich in nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium. They are the bee's knees, whereby most of the stuff we put in our little garbage bins inside is, you know, it's just feel good for us and it's diverting things from the waste stream. It really doesn't add to the compost, and sometimes it's so cold it slows it down. But fall leaves and shredded fall leaves and coffee grounds, you will make fabulous compost. You will be.
Okay, well, my husband's been wanting to buy a leaf blower anyway. He's talked about it, so now it's a good reason to get it.
Make sure he buys one with a reverse setting and a collection bag. You'll
never
blow leaves again.
Okay.
Okay, so just be patient. When those leaves start to fall, you can start making compost. All right, Jen?
Okay.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
1-888-346-9499. Tim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing?
Good, Tim. How are you, sir?
All right.
And where is Tim all right?
Tim is in Denver, Colorado right now.
Excellent, excellent. The Mile High City. What can we do for Tim?
I'm looking for a way to get rid of rabbits out of my garden, out of my yard.
Okay.
Sprays and even poisons and even trapping them does not work.
And the bad thing about poisons is you wind up killing raptors and important creatures, some of whom are protected. You know, there have been cases of eagles being killed by these ill-advised poisons when they've picked up the prey. And you just can create such a catastrophic series of events that you wind up killing the predators who are actually helping you keep the rabbits under control.
That's true. That's why I didn't want to use those either.
Typically, we start with fencing. In the cases of small areas, well-defined areas, I really like motion-activated sprinklers. They're sprinkler heads you set up to your hose, you turn the hose on, you point it at the area you don't want any animals in, and when an animal of any size comes into that area, it turns at them and shoots them with cold water, which is a very effective deterrent, especially for cats and dogs. Now, here in the East, we only have cottontail rabbits, and cottontail rabbits don't dig. I'm not familiar with the wildlife of Colorado. Do you have burrowing rabbits, or do you mostly...
No, they don't burrow. It's just they're destroying the grass and eating all the other vegetation on top.
Yes.
Flowers,
oh, yes.
Bushes.
There was a famous case in Chicago where the city was trapping rabbits in a public park, and the people were appalled, and they said, you can't do this. You can't be killing Thumper. And they made the city stop trapping the rabbits. And within, I think it was a five-year period, the park was gone. It was just eaten to the ground.
A lot of neighbors, a lot of people I know, you know, they just have to live with it. That's what they say.
Well, no, you don't necessarily have to live with it. Rabbits are the easiest creature to fence out. You get two-foot-high fencing. You sink it 6 inches in the ground, a foot and a high above ground, and that's enough to keep cottontails out of your garden.
How about your backyard?
Well, I mean, you put in the fencing and keep them out. It's much less expensive than buying sprays. Your other alternatives would be to adopt your own predator, a Jack Russell Terrier who would roam the backyard, or rescue a couple of barn cats. And
that's what I was thinking, cats.
But that's very controversial because cats will kill songbirds as well. And people get very upset about free-roaming cats. Very controversial topic. Whereby the Jack Russell Terrier, this is their job. You know, they don't go after birds. They are essentially ratting dogs, and they'll go after mice, rats, gophers, rabbits. And, you know, rabbits are not all that dumb. If there's a little dog running around who has a lot of energy and likes to take down other mammals, they can pretty much sense that. I've not found any kind of repellents effective against rabbits. But fencing is often a very inexpensive and useful solution. And again, if you have another area that is smaller and more well-defined, when the weather is not freezing cold, these motion-activated sprinklers are great.
Because that's what I was thinking next, because sprinkler, I mean, like you say, fencing, but they're also in the front yard eating all that stuff, but you're not going to fence in your front yard, so you're going with... A sprinkler is about your best weapon then.
Motion-activated sprinkler, they work. You're not there. You buy them once as opposed to repellents. They have kept my garden safe for years and years.
Okay. Because the garden, I put up a fence and it kept them out. But like in the front, you got the bushes and the flowers and the grass, which they're eating and destroying. And I guess my next weapon is a sprinkler is what you're suggesting.
Or it seems like we need to go to the rescue dog service and see if there's a Jack Russell with your name on it.
Okay.
All right, Tim?
Sounds good.
All right, good luck, sir. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. How to sow a new cool season lawn? Our question this week comes from Amelianias, but we're going to use the one sent in by Valerie in Bethesda, Maryland, who writes, Mike, most of our grass died last summer. We thought it might come back. No such luck for the most part, so we will plant a new lawn. When do we start killing the existing grass with Roundup or a similar product? And when should we reseed? After Labor Day? Well, how about never for the Roundup, Val? Is never good for you? I strongly believe that no one should ever use toxic chemical herbicides anywhere. But your region, with its proximity to the Chesapeake Bay and other vulnerable bodies of water, would be an especially poor place to use a chemical that's been strongly linked by university research to the death of frogs, toads, and other amphibians. And why would you expect a new lawn to thrive in soil that was just sprayed with a chemical designed to kill grass? Sheesh! Besides, this chemical approach is most often used when the homeowner or landscaper wants to try and dodge the big issue. The crappy, compacted, lifeless soil they hope this new lawn will somehow grow in. One of the biggest mistakes Americans make is trying to grow grass in the equivalent of concrete. It's like trying to paint a room with greasy walls. Fail to prepare the soil for planting, and your lawn will never prosper. Spend the time and energy to do this right, and your turf will practically take care of itself in the future. And forget gimmicks. No technique like slit seeding, hydro seeding, or other nonsense can overcome the problem of lousy soil. It'll just raise the cost of your ugly new lawn. So do it right. First, till the soil down to a depth of 8 inches. If a huge percentage of that soil is clay, have some of it hauled away. Then go over the area and rake away as much of the old green material as you can. If your lawn was not treated with herbicides, pile it all up somewhere to compost. If your lawn was treated, you can still do this, but the resulting compost can only be used on a lawn, not near other plants. And sin no more on your new turf. Now, this tilling will cause weed seeds to arise. In his excellent book on lawn care, our resident turf grass expert, Dr. Nick Christians of Iowa State University, recommends the stale seedbed technique I often advocate to get around this problem. After tilling up and raking the soil, level it out, water it well, and wait a week to 10 days for the weed seeds that were uncovered and then replanted by your tilling to germinate. Then toast them to death with a flame weeder at the height of a hot and sunny day, or slice them off at the soil line with a sharp hoe, taking care not to disturb the soil again. This will eliminate the vast majority of weeds that would have attempted to compete with your new lawn. You can either move to the next step at this point, or water the soil a second time, wait another 10 days, and repeat your preferred technique of gentle killing to make sure you start off weed-free. Then have a big load of yard waste compost delivered, or a 50-50 mix of compost and high-quality screen black topsoil, and spread it at least an inch deep on top of your prepared old soil. Level that soil again. A level surface is essential for a good-looking lawn. Then broadcast the new seed evenly into this rich seed bed, and either gently rake it into the top of your new compost soil mix, or even better, spread a thin layer of compost on top of the seed. Now, the ideal time to spread this seed is, quote, late summer, early fall. Specifically, Nick says that the magic window for sowing a new cool season lawn, that's bluegrass, rye, and or one of the fescues, is August 15th through the end of September. This avoids the midsummer heat that would burn the tender new grass to a crisp, while allowing plenty of time for germination in the still warm soil and for the roots to become well established before winter slows things down. Water the newly sown seed gently every morning and every evening. The water must be applied gently. The closer to a mist you can achieve, the better. The seed should germinate within a week. During this time, try and keep the soil moist. A very gentle mist all evening long would not be out of line. Once it does germinate, stop the evening watering and never water in the evening again. But continue the daily morning watering until your new grass blades are an inch high. Then the roots should be deep enough for you to drop off to deep watering twice a week. Mornings only, and only if rain don't do the job for you. Cut an inch off the top when it reaches about 3.5 inches tall. Make sure your blade is super sharp. After that, stick with a 3-inch high cut. Don't rake the lawn that fall. Use a blower or leaf vac to get rid of any leaves, or just mow them into the new grass with a mulching mower. Then give that lawn a feeding with weed-preventing corn gluten meal in the early spring. Never feed it in the summer, and give it a big feeding every fall. Your new lawn will look marvelous. Well, that sure was a detailed walk through the right way to plant a new cool season lawn now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it in detail with some extra information for our friends in warm season lawn land, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to plant me in cold hard clay if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. And please check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you like a dog at your doorstep at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmasters are Richard the Barbarian Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our well-prepared intern is Jessica Mandick. Perfectly leveled Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Soundly seated Al Banks is our editor. I'm sodden Mike McGrath, and I'll green up to see you again next week. Enough with the endless warnings about the dangers of wood mulch. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll name the mulches you should be using to protect your plants, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Create a classic and classy garden with the help of Mike McGrath and You Bet Your Garden every Saturday morning at 11 here on WHYY.